There's a moment you realize you're ready for what's next in your career. Maybe it's when you're trying a new scone recipe and think, I could open a cafe. Or maybe you're helping a coworker and say, I could teach a course on this. Whatever your moment is, it's never too early to plan for a career that lives longer. That's why the younger you are, the more you need AARP. For skills training, resume tips, and job listings, visit aarp.org/work.
Hey, listener, are you happy with your current chicken wings? Do you wish you had something a little saucier? If you answered yes, then it might be time for you to break up with your old chicken wings and get a new honey. Lemon pepper wing from Popeyes. Share the wings with your friends so they can see it's time to move on, too. Head to Popeyes and get 6-piece honey lemon pepper wings for $5.99. At participating U.S. restaurants, price may vary.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the latest edition of the Pro Basketball Talk podcast here at NBC Sports. I'm Kurt Heelan, managing editor of the NBA page at NBCSports.com, and today, Mark Medina from the USA Today is going to sort out the entire Western Conference for us. It's going to be that easy. Actually, it's going to be the wide-open, crazy conference where it's really kind of hard to predict what's going on. There's obvious favorites, but there's a lot of intrigue. We're going to get into all of it. First, just a reminder, if you like this podcast, if you've enjoyed the preview series, we've talked about Utah, we've talked about Golden State, we've talked about a lot of stuff, including a great win with Tommy Beers about fantasy. You can find all that, look, at Apple Podcasts or Spotify or anywhere, Stitcher, Google Play, wherever you get your podcasts. Be sure, though, to drop us a line, comment, let us know what you want to hear and see. And without further ado, let's get into this and bring in Mark. So how you doing today, Mark?
I'm good. I'm getting the hang of this new gig. And
By the way, congratulations on the new gig. For people who don't know, he is now, along with Jeff Zilgit, one of the two lead NBA writers at USA Today. So that's awesome. You're kind of out here in the West, which is why I brought you in to talk about the West, man. It's cut and dried and easy. This should be short.
Yeah, I mean, unlike the last 5 years, it would have been short, right? Because we would have been said, oh, yeah, Golden State Warriors win the NBA championship, end of story, right?
Exactly.
And now it just seems like it's completely wide open with all the changes that the Warriors have gone through and, you know, all the changes that the Lakers and the Clippers and have gone through. It's going to be pretty fun, to say the least.
Exactly. Well, let's start with a question I asked you when I saw you at the Clippers preseason game the other night. What do you think the odds are that one of the two LA teams, that there is a Los Angeles team, is in the NBA Finals?
Yeah, I'm willing to put like basically all my life savings into saying that one of the LA teams will be in the NBA Finals, no ifs, ands, or buts. I think you have to hedge your bets if you're just asking one of the teams, but when you're looking at both the Lakers and the Clippers, not only on paper should they be the best teams in the Western Conference, but just the way things have played out. I mean, the star power speaks for itself with Kawhi Leonard and Paul George on the Clippers and LeBron James and Anthony Davis on the Lakers. But I think on the Clippers end, they have all that, you know, the steal a Spurs phrase, that corporate knowledge with Doc Rivers as the coach, a really good bench that helped them overachieve last year, and a really good ownership with Steve Ballmer, where, you know, the Lakers, they didn't quite have that identity last year, to say the least, but I think it's their feeling that early on that they think that they're getting out from underneath that. They have a more veteran coaching staff with Frank Vogel. You know, Magic Johnson's out of the picture with the front office, and they feel that because of that, there'll be more synergy there. And to the Lakers' own admission, they have better players that are better suited for LeBron James. And it also helps they have Anthony Davis. So,
yeah
it's going to be a fun matchup, to say the least. And I think on top of that, like, I don't want to say it's going to be a 100% certainty, but I'm pretty confident that one of those teams will get to the NBA Finals after beating the other team in the Western Conference Finals.
I mean, the only thing that keeps that from happening is that the West is going to be such a bunched up thing. I'm with you. Actually, that's what I have. I was just going through my West predictions this morning for some upcoming posts over the next week at NBC Sports and the Pro Basketball Talk page. And, you know, going over awards, but also going over predictions. And I'm like, yeah, you know, I've got Lakers and Clippers in the finals, but it's very possible when you look at that, because I think with Utah and Denver, who will, in my book, will probably finish 1-2 in the regular season. I think those are really good regular season teams. But then you get into, where does Houston, I think, honestly, between one, you're going to have, I don't know, how many games? Less than 10 games separating one and seven or eight. Like, I don't know about eight, but the top six or seven, they're all going to be bunched up. And one little, hey, Anthony Davis twists his ankle and misses 2 weeks. That could knock the Lakers down a peg or two. And it's the same with a lot of the teams in there.
Yeah, and you know, I think going into this season, the Clippers have the best team on paper, but literally going into the season, they don't, because Paul George is still sidelined with his offseason surgery. And as of now, you know, the sense that I'm getting is the Clippers are not expecting him to be in training camp at all.
No.
As far as he's not playing any preseason games, but Doc Rivers was saying that he doesn't even expect him to do any contact drills during training camp. It's just been all non-contact. So when you connect the dots there, and you know, the Clippers are obviously going to be cautious with him anyway, but typical protocol for that is once you get clear for contact, they want those guys to get some practices in, some scrimmages in. So when you align that with the calendar, you know, he might miss the first 5-6 games.
At least.
I don't want to say that's going to like derail the Clippers season. Like, it's an 82 game season, but when you're talking about the seeding implications, yeah, it could do a lot. And I think on the flip side of that, you know, tying this to Golden State, right, is they're a team that can kind of go one or two ways. Like, they could be the team that, you know, competes for a playoff spot as that dangerous first round opponent because of Steph Curry, Draymond Green, and Klay Thompson coming back, presumably how he was before he had that ACL injury in his left knee in game 6 of the NBA Finals. Or they could miss the playoffs. But, you know, if they're a team that's to be reckoned with, or one of these other teams in the West, I wonder how much jockeying there will be of, you know, certain teams trying to play as well as they can to build a higher seed, and then maybe the other way around of certain top teams trying to rest or even tank so they avoid, like, the most difficult first-round matchup. It would be pretty interesting, to say the least, because usually – that jockeying at the end of the season has to do with everything with the ping pong balls and the lottery. Now it might have to deal with, you know, the playoff reality.
Yeah, exactly. Because I think depending on injuries and depending on whatever, there are teams you probably want to avoid or get in that bottom part. And we've seen that, by the way, that worked out. We saw that last year in the playoffs, man. If you tank and you get a little lucky and you get the matchups you want, you can go a little farther. Let's talk about the Clippers for a second, though. It's an interesting thing. Like you said, they're going to be without Paul George. I'll tell you the sources I talked to. I heard mid-November. We'll see. Nobody really wants to put a timeline on it. Obviously, Paul George wants to be back as soon as possible. And if there's one thing you learn quickly, and Mark will back me up on this, covering the NBA, players are absolutely the worst possible source for their return. Like, they are convinced they're going to be back sooner or later. But
if you don't mind me interjecting, I can completely attest to this. And Kobe Bryant is the best example. I remember when he had his knee injury in the 2013-14 season, only 6 games after he had returned from that Achilles injury. You know, after the game in Memphis. Yeah, he was, you know, he was seen limping and he had to leave the game, and he was saying, oh, it's fine, I'll be back in a few days. And all of a sudden, he's out for the rest of the season. The following season, he comes back, plays 35 games, but has a torn rotator cuff in his right shoulder. So bad that he could only shoot left-handed in the game against New Orleans before Byron Scott wound up pulling him out. And he was saying, oh, it's fine, it's a stinger, I'll be back. Well, he was out for the rest of the season. Now, with Kobe, I think that was more of him just lying, and he knows how bad it was, but he just wanted to kind of make the best of everything. But yeah, to your point, like, guys are always thinking, okay, they're only a day or two from coming back and they just need to put some ice on, it'll be fine. Doctors feel much differently, and, you know, to a lesser extent, so do head coaches.
Exactly. And especially over the long course of a season, I think what advantage for the Clippers is, and I think they play, I mean, they've been really light with Kawhi in preseason games and stuff. And that was to be expected as part of this. And obviously they're going to load manage him this season, but I think you're going to see more Kawhi early and then get him some rest on the back end when Paul George is not only back, but kind of back in 100%, just because they can't afford to fall in a big hole. You can't afford to dig yourself in a hole early. The other advantage they have, though, is, yeah, look, they gave up some talent from last year. This isn't quite the 48-win team. They don't have – Danilo Gallinari was important to them. I love Shai Gilgeous. I know they did not want to give up Shai Gilgeous Alexander. I think they're going to like – he's got some development, but I think they're going to love him in Oklahoma City. And that said, they put out a good starting five, and then they bring Lou Williams and Montrezl Harrell off the bench with a... That might be the best pick-and-roll combo in the league right now. Like, the chemistry between those guys is just incredible. They can bring that off the bench and win games and keep themselves in the mix until they get healthy.
Yeah, and I think, you know, the 2 points that you raised about the Clippers that are going to be interesting. First, with Kawhi Leonard, how he's going to be managed. It sounds like from his words, from Doc Rivers' words, they're not going to specifically emulate Toronto's load management program. Because, you know, Kawhi says that he's healthy. Like, he doesn't have any lingering effects from that quad injury that sidelined him for 9 games 2 years ago in his final year in San Antonio. But just knowing how Doc Rivers operates, particularly with stars, he's always been a guy dating back to the Celtics years that he always handles his vets with care. Philosophically, his practices and shoot-arounds are pretty light. There's a lot of times that he'll cancel things anyway. So I think going into the season, you know, they're not – I don't think they're targeting specific games that he's going to preemptively sit out, but just through the course of a natural NBA season, there's going to be times off of back-to-backs or just small lingering injuries or fatigue. Well, they'll be ahead of the curve on that, and they'll rest or limit Kawhi's workload accordingly. And the good thing with that, with or without Paul George, yes, they did have to give up a lot to get Paul George to Oklahoma City. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander's a great player, so is Danilo Gallinari. But a lot of the casualties are kind of going to be felt down the line with all these future draft picks. But they still have that culture, that continuity of the bench with Lou Williams, Montrezl Harrell, you know, Vita Zubac, Michael Green, Landry Shamet, where – you know, they really forged an identity last year of the sum being the being greater than its parts, them having an edginess and underdog mentality, so much that, you know, it challenged the Warriors to 6 games in the first round. Now, the Clippers can't be that underdog anymore. You can't ever be that if you have two superstars. But I think that they still have the same mentality because of three things. A, of who those bench players are. Like, that's just the makeup of those guys. Patrick Beverley, you got to throw in there as well. Two, that's kind of the identity that Kawhi and Paul George have. Like, they are lunch pail players, but they also happen to be superstars. And then three, I think the underdog mentality that some of these role players have, I think it feeds into this because, hey, as much as they want Kawhi and Paul on their team, like, they're competitors. Like, they want to play. They want to show that they're worthy of being in the rotation with them. So I think that that's fueled a lot of good competitive practices, and I think that that's going to carry over into how they, you know, how they shape their identity this upcoming season.
I agree. By the way, I tweeted this out during the preseason game the other night. I think two guys that are going to be critical for them, and I think two guys you very well may see in the closing lineup, are Jamichael Green and Landry Shamet. And that's because they can shoot the three. And you think about it with Paul George and Kawhi Leonard, both of whom, by the way, we're just talking offensively. Defensively, obviously, they're really good and elite, really. But offensively, they're both kind of slashers. They can both work off the ball, but they both slash. Jamichael Green gives you more room. Now, you can play him as a small ball five and stretch the floor, but they need, I mean, you could see it in the preseason. Shamet just shoots the rock, man. He's just a perfect two for what they need with Patrick Beverley. You know, it just, I like the way that whole thing would fit together as a closing lineup most of the time. I mean, they can go to Mo Harkless as a kind of wing three if they want to give those George and or Kawhi a night off and let him, he's a good defender. He can take some of the key guys, and Zubac is the big body who soaks up minutes and plays kind of smart for them. But I just like the way that roster is constructed when it's healthy. I like it, especially as a playoff lineup. The one team I think that would really be a problem for them in the playoffs, the Lakers. And it becomes about matchups and size. The Lakers, their two stars are just bigger. Like, LeBron is just, you know, just a beast. And then Anthony Davis is incredibly tall and athletic, and I think that the size creates a little more of a matchup problem. It's a fascinating matchup if those two end up meeting.
Yeah, and I don't know where I handicap, because I think, I mean, not to use an excuse, but it is going to come down to who is healthiest for the end of the playoffs. But I think all things being equal, I think you can make the case from a continuity standpoint and a chemistry standpoint the Clippers have the advantage, also a coaching standpoint. I mean, I think the one thing that's going to play into Doc Rivers' wheelhouse is, look, he got a lot of, deserving praise last year where, you know, he was almost MacGyver with all these moving parts, right, yeah. of a roster and with all the injuries.
And they trade Tobias Harris midway through the season.
Right, but he finds rotations. He puts guys to succeed here. First world problem, but he's going to be doing, I think, a fluid starting lineup around Kawhi Leonard and Paul George for the same reason. So I give the handicap to Doc for his ability to make adjustments, chase matchups. But the Lakers, I don't know anyone that can stop Anthony Davis. And you have LeBron James as a playmaker. Like, that's just really tough. I mean, I would think, again, healthy, I would say that LeBron and AD are the better duo than Paul George and Kawhi. And that's not saying anything disrespectful to Kawhi or Paul. It's just how talented LeBron and AD are. But I think the question mark that I have is, on one hand, yes, the Lakers upgraded their shooting. They have better role players, but they're all new, and I don't know who's going to rise out of that. Will Kyle Kuzma become that third guy and you know, the inspiring young player that's growing and develop a three-point shot? Who knows? Will Danny Green be the Danny Green in the regular season, or the one that can sometimes disappear later on, right? So I think the number one thing, it's going to come down to health, but I think the second and possibly equally important thing is, how do the players and the coaching staff handle all these moving parts together to be able to kind of handle this chess match of adjustments and counter moves and all that?
Yeah, I would say I think Kuzma is their third best player, but I think that's really the ultimate question. I mean, you've got Rajon Rondo, who looks good in the playoffs, plays smart, but he's just not the same guy night in and night out. And obviously there's the shooting issues. The Clippers couldn't get rid of Avery Bradley fast enough last year. I mean, and now the Lakers are going to rely on him a lot. Caldwell Pope is fine. Like you said, Danny Green, he's not young anymore. You got JaVale McGee and Dwight Howard as your centers. A lot of things have to go right for that to work. Like, it just feels like for all that to come together the right way, just a lot of things have to go right for them.
Yeah, and I think the center spot, I mean, they're already going to have question marks to begin with getting DeMarcus Cousins. Like, it was a move they needed to make, and frankly, it was available because of just what happened with the Lakers with losing Allen Kawhi and DeMarcus having a depressed market because of all the questions regarding, you know, his injuries. I mean, he was coming off an Achilles. He had some mixed progress with the Warriors, but not enough for them to think, hey, we got to keep him back because, you know, he had a quad injury. He had some limitations with just his conditioning and just overall fit in today's NBA. But them losing him was a huge step back because I think that, historically speaking, for the players that do come back from an Achilles injury, the second year is always the best because you can always get off that rust. And here, it's weird saying it, like, we did this podcast, 7 years ago? Like, we'd be like, why is JaVale McGee the starting center? But I'm a believer in who he is and how he's changed and the role he's put in. But, you know, he netted career highs in minutes, but I think at some point he does have the law of diminishing returns, and that excitement of him being a lob threat and being able to be somewhat of a rim protector diminishes the more he plays. Dwight, he's doing all the right things. He's saying all the right things, but I do have some skepticism on how that plays long term. Like, he knows what he signed up for. The Lakers have all the leverage with him being having a non-guaranteed contract. And I don't think I'm overstating this. Like, I think this is his last chance to salvage his NBA career, considering how rocky things have gone ever since leaving the Lakers the first time with Houston, Charlotte, Atlanta, and Washington. But I do wonder how well can he temper his frustrations through the large sample size of possibly not having a role, or maybe, you know, him being frustrated that he thinks from the bench that, hey, I'm better for this kind of matchup, but Frank Vogel decides to go otherwise. Have to wait and see. I mean, Dwight knows where he's at, but he has just had a really strong history of saying the right things initially and then all of a sudden becoming a problem. So it's going to be a potentially tough thing, but the Lakers are convinced that, you know, they know what they're signing up for. They're fine from a contractual standpoint in that they laid it all out, the terms, and Dwight was pretty forthcoming in meetings with players and management and the coaching staff. But at some point, it's all about a kind of a wait and see.
Yeah, I'm with you on this. This is Dwight Howard's last shot. This doesn't work. There is no other team picking him up. But I don't blame the Lakers for this. A, like you said, once Cousins went down, their choices were pretty limited. But the contract they gave Dwight Howard, where it's not guaranteed fully until the 9th, and they can just prorate him at any point and drop him, A, I think not only puts pressure on him, but it just, I feel a lot better about this. Either it works or it doesn't work. But they, you know, look, when this first went down, the day after the Cousins thing, injury, and, you know, I was around Team USA and I was talking with an executive from another team that was there watching him, and they're like, man, I just cycle through guys. I'd bring in Dwight Howard, and as soon as it doesn't work, wasn't thinking non-guaranteed. They're just thinking minimum contracts. He's out. And then I bring in, you know, Noah, and if that doesn't work, then he's out. And I go get, you know, who else is on the list? Fareed or whoever. I keep going through guys until I find whatever works because I have to. Like, my window is now.
Yeah, and I totally get why the Lakers made this move. It's a move they needed to make. But I think, you know, you hit on a great point that it's more about if things doesn't work out with the Lakers, like, they can cut bait and cut their ties with Dwight. But then it's a matter of, okay, where do they go from here? What's the next best option? Yeah. And maybe they can find that next best option. But, you know, when you're a team that's expected to – you know, make the playoffs for the first time in 2013. And even if they're downplaying it internally, they for sure want to win an NBA championship because that's what the Lakers are all about. And, yeah, and LeBron has a certain window, and this is, could, you know, the audition for Anthony Davis to stay long-term. Kind of going through this process of trying to be a contender on the fly is very tough. Like, usually the teams that have the best chance to win a title, A, is healthy talent, but B, some sort of continuity. And if this experiment doesn't work out, that will just perpetuate the idea that they don't have that kind of continuity that they'd like to be able to build.
Yeah, exactly. I think that this is a in some ways, a referendum on management and ownership. Let me rephrase that. I don't know that it is, but I think it will be perceived that way, fair or not.
Yeah, I don't think it's a referendum on them. I mean, they have to make the moves that are in front of them, but I think it also illustrates that, hey, they still have a lot of work to do. They have to, as much as you want to get AD in a trade, and either before the deadline, which didn't happen last season, or before the draft, which happened this past summer, like, you also have to build a core culture and foundation and continuity. And the Lakers are well aware of that, but I think it just illustrates that if worst-case scenario, it's back to the drawing board, and it might be a process.
Yeah. How good do you think the Houston Rockets are?
It's an interesting question. Like, I don't think I think they're good. I could see them being a third seed, but I could also see them being a fourth, fifth, sixth seed. I think the certainty is this: James Harden is going to be James Harden. Like, he's going to get his numbers. He's going to be productive. Even if the Russell Westbrook pairing doesn't work, you know, James has shown, like in the past with Chris Paul, through their ups and downs, he can still do James Harden things. And I think Mike D'Antoni is a great coach. Who knows where he's going to be long term, but at least for this season, like, they're going to get to where they are. But they have a lot of weird situations, and I don't even mean about Daryl Morey and the whole China fiasco. Like, it's, you know, how do the Rockets look at D'Antoni long term? Yeah. Even if Russell Westbrook and James Harden have had recent experience of what it's like of shouldering the burden and the negative parts of that, and they have a history together in Oklahoma City, I'm still skeptical. Like, I could see it working initially, because they have those good intentions, but at some point, through a large sample size or when the game is on the line, at some point that might come to a head where, even if they're not, like, having quote-unquote issues with each other, they might both feel uncomfortable and they might have philosophical differences of, hey, when is it best to have James have the ball versus Westbrook, right? And I could see a scenario, right, because of all those question marks, that maybe the Warriors get in as a 6 seed or a 7 seed. I don't think the Rockets are going to be a 1st seed, but like I can see Warriors being like a 6th, 7th seed and suddenly upstate in Houston. Like it would be such a perfect story, right? Because of what the Warriors have done to the Rockets the last few years, and you know they're feeling challenged and vulnerable, but it's still not enough because of the Warriors' equity. There's a lot of question marks with Houston, and you know the whole China situation is another whole thing. And you know once they get this whole preseason ends, like I'm sure there'll be some more comfort level with things going on, but I don't gather that Daryl's job is in jeopardy, but it is an awkward situation of the president, kind of publicly saying that what Daryl did was wrong and what just the dynamic is philosophically with how much they want to spend on a team and how much they want to keep Mike D'Antoni long-term. It's going to be a very interesting season, to say the least, with them.
Yeah, exactly. Let's just say there have been plenty of rumors around the league about, well before the China thing, about how long Daryl Morey would be there with the new ownership and the dynamic there. So we'll see how that all plays out. My question with them is, like, I think they actually get it worked out during the regular season. Mike D'Antoni staggers them a little. They play faster again with Westbrook there, and Harden's draining trail threes and then killing it in the half court. My question just becomes, you get to the postseason, and I don't think they're a very good defensive team, period. They're not a deep team. And now I've got to play Westbrook and Harden next to each other for 30 minutes a night. I mean, those teams in the West are just going to destroy that defensively. Like, it just, Harden's not as bad a defender, especially team defender, as his rep. But, I mean, last season, Damian Lillard just went at Westbrook. Like, they just went at him. And I think that you're going to have a couple teams now, a couple guys you think you can go at on that roster defensively in a playoff series. So, I think they're a good regular season team. I have them as a top 4 seed. I just don't know that they stick there.
Yeah, and I think what the Rockets have shown in the last few years is they can wear down during the playoffs. Part of it is because of what Chris Paul's injuries lend themselves to. I mean, he has, you know, a playoffs ending injury against Houston, or against the Warriors in the 2018 playoffs. He wasn't fully himself in last year's playoffs. So I think on one hand, like, the Rockets feel like they've addressed that a little bit because Russell Westbrook isn't as injury prone. But look, Russell Westbrook is a high usage player. He runs up and down the floor. You never know. Things could happen. But number two, during the regular season, I don't think it's in the Rockets' nature, nor can they really afford to load manage any of those guys. It's going to be about trying to build the best seeding you can in a pretty tough Western Conference. And I wouldn't be surprised if they wind up going deep in the playoffs, a team like the Clippers or the Lakers would be able to expose the Rockets the way that the Warriors did. Like, the Warriors no longer have this luxury because of all the changes that went through with them. But you know, in the past two playoff runs, like, they were able to rely not only on their talent, but some of their role players and their ability to make different adjustments because of the personnel, where the Rockets, you know, they were really just riding on a lot of ISO heavy ball and letting James do his thing. And that's very effective. But at some point, there is kind of that phrase that I've been using a lot in this podcast, the wall of diminishing returns. And yeah, Westbrook might help reduce that issue, but I don't think it's completely away with that.
No, not at all. Let's talk a little about the two kind of you got to prove it to me teams in the league. You said 100% you thought that you'd see a Los Angeles team in there. I'm more at the 80-85 range, and I think the team, trades could change the dynamic, and there's always that, and what have you, injuries and what have you. But if you ask me why I'm lower, I think Utah might be able to jump into that group. Like, they don't have the superstar. But now they've got, I mean, when you watched them in the playoffs last year, the problem was they could defend, but they didn't have the shot creation, isolation shot creation. You kind of need, like Kevin Durant said, at some point you kind of need that in the playoffs against a good team. It was Donovan Mitchell against the world. It's not anymore. It's Mike Conley getting, who's a great pick and roll guy now with, look, Rudy Gobert is probably the best pick setter roll guy in the league right now as a center. And you add Bogdanovich out there, I just like them a lot better, and I think they play well within Quinn Snyder's system. They'll defend. That's the one team there's a certain amount of 1980, you know, I'm sorry, 2004 Pistons that would have to go on where kind of the sum of the parts really has to add up and the defense has to be phenomenal, but I could see it.
Yeah, for sure. Now, I think that they're better than that Pistons team because here, I mean, Mike Conley should have been an all-star like a million years ago, but like even if there's no, like, and you, obviously Rudy Gobert felt slighted last year with not yes. being there, but like even if there's not like a quote-unquote superstar player, they have a lot of like second-tier star players with Mike Conley and Rudy Gobert. Donovan Mitchell is growing, and I think the other part is they have a grittiness, a really good defensive identity, and a lot of guys that can make three-point shots. And I've always liked, ever since Quinn Snyder took over there, like his ability to kind of have this really blue-pail or blue-collar lunch-pail work ethic yeah. of a team, but also a very innovative offense. And I think one of the things that's going to be very interesting, not only with Utah, but just the entire NBA, particularly in the Western Conference, is this. How much will continuity be a currency, right? Yeah. Like, there's all these changes with player movement throughout different teams, and mostly, with exception for the Warriors, teams have benefited from that, right, this yeah. season. But there's always that acclimation process, what the dynamic's going to be, and I think that can get them ahead of the curve a little bit, at least in the standings, to open the regular season, but also in the playoffs. Like, I go back to a quote that Danny Green told me with the Lakers, and it was a reason why he felt confident about them, is he was saying that as much as championship teams have superstars, a lot of it hinges on role players making plays. And here, I think Utah has all of that there. Yeah. You know, Joe Ingles can defend. Yep. He can make a three. Donovan Mitchell can play make. Mike Conley can play make. They have really good defenders, you know, specifically with Rudy Gobert. Ed Davis is a good defender as well, good pick and roll player. I think that they could do two things. They could at least make things challenging for a top seed. But I think they're going to be a top seed to begin with. But, you know, as they get on later in the playoffs, they have enough to upset one of those, you know, quote unquote favored teams in LA. I really like what they're doing, and I would put them as, you know, a third, fourth seed at best.
Yeah, I like them a lot. And if you want more Utah, if you're a Utah fan, you can go back through the podcasts here at Pro Basketball Talk Podcast. Andy Larson from the Salt Lake Tribune was on, and we got into all of that in detail. But I do really like them. The other team is the one we saw recently together, Denver, who was out playing the Clippers. I love them in the regular season. That's a team with a lot of continuity, a lot of depth. Man, that's a deep team. They just roll out guys who can play. They're going to add Mike. I think Michael Porter Jr. we start to see more of and more of as the year goes on. He kind of breaks out next year. There's a lot to like there. Is it enough?
I don't think it's enough. I mean, I think they're going to be a good team in the West, but I don't think they're going to go far. You know, part of this might be just my view from the Warriors' end, but, you know, they were always getting everyone's best shot last year. But when they played the Nuggets, like, they exposed their, you know, lack of depth and just ability to match up with star talent, where I think, you know, it's good that the Nuggets have that continuity. I think Mike Malone's a great coach. But I think during the playoffs, at some point, some of their strengths aren't going to be as many strengths anymore. Like, I think at some point, Nikola Jokic will not be as effective, and some of their ability to get up and down the floor will be nullified by the fact that in the playoffs, the game always slows down and gets more physical. I do like them, but I would give the edge to Utah over Denver because I think some of the players are better, but also I think the way they play is more conducive for a postseason setting.
I think what's Denver is one of those teams. I think Portland's another one, and we'll get to them in a sec. Where, look, I wouldn't be surprised if they made a move during the season. And in Denver's case, they have the pieces. Like, they've got picks, but they've also got, I mean, I don't know. Michael Beasley's good. Michael Beasley is just a good player who's about to be a free agent that they probably can't afford. And I wouldn't be shocked if they moved him and got something of quality back that could help them right now. Beasley obviously helps them, but they might decide, is this a team that goes, and I think that they or Portland or somebody in the West is going to do this. They're going to, They're not going to have a horrible start, but they're going to start off 500 or a little below for the first 20 games and suddenly go, oh man, we're in a hole. We're in the West. We're not as good as we thought we were. This conference is tough. We got to make a move. And then you see them start to try to line things up through, you know, after it. I don't think we'll see anything big before December 15th when it's, because so much of the league signed this summer, you know, you got to wait for those guys to come off online. But if anybody's going to jump out there and make a move and make a big splash, if somebody like, you know, I don't know. I don't know that Bradley Beal's coming available this year, but if he does, like, does that, like, Denver's poised to make that kind of play.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting because the last few years, the Nuggets have kind of done the traditional old-fashioned approach of, hey, like, let's just embrace the process and just keep developing guys. And so if they do make a move, like, does that kind of go against what their philosophy has been the last few years of doing that? And, you know, if you make a move, it's in theory to make the team better, but how, at what point would that be detrimental to losing that continuity? Like, in a weird way, the move that they're making, the offseason addition, is the fact that Michael Porter Jr. is back. Like, he's, yeah, you know, getting through his injury, and that's like a bonus. And then it's a matter of, like, how well does he integrate? Like, maybe that's like the new addition that they have, and they didn't have to make a move. It was just him coming back from an injury, right? But I think the thing that's challenging with these small markets, they don't have the same kind of spending mechanisms. And I think with Denver's case, like, yeah, they can make a move, but they're going to be winding up changing their whole identity. And, you know, maybe it's for the better, but I think it's, when you do that, it would have to be something that's like in a win now mode situation. And unlike the Lakers, like, I don't think that they have that kind of environment where they can really afford to do that.
Yeah. What about the Portland Trailblazers? I mean, it's interesting. In Portland, they're thinking conference finals are better because that's what they did last year. There's really high expectations and hopes. And it's funny, like, the analytics guys have them barely making the playoffs, if at all. I mean, that's a team where there's a real divergence of opinions. I think they're a playoff team, but in the playoffs, they still don't scare me.
No, they don't scare me at all. And I think they had to make the choice to commit long-term to Damian, yeah, Lillard and CJ McCollum because, hey, they're in their prime. Like, they're going to be the guys that get them through the postseason. And if they are going to do something, it's going to be on them. But, you know, I think that just more reflects the talent of those two players, but also their willingness to be loyal to Portland as opposed to joining the rest of the NBA stars that want to, you know, use their leverage to go to another team or demand a trade. But other than that, the continuity has been nice. You know, Pau Gasol, getting Kent Bazemore, Hassan Whiteside, like, they're all nice, but I don't know if they're game changers, especially with Pau, where he's at in his career. And, you know, they also lost a fair amount of players, right? Like, with Mo Harkless and Seth Curry and Al-Farouq Aminu and Evan Turner and Enes Kanter. So, like, usually before, one of their calling cards was the continuity. They have the continuity of CJ McCollum and Damian Lillard, and that's going to be huge. But they don't have the kind of role players, at least now, that can be plugged into immediate needs that can, you know, soften those guys' workloads. So I could see the Blazers getting to the playoffs because of the backcourt, maybe winning the first round, but at some point, like, they're going to run into the buzzsaw that is all these loaded teams in the Western Conference, and it's going to kind of be the same story again with them.
I mean, they're weak at the four. Maybe they should try to go after a Kevin Love or something, but I'm not sure how well that works. You know, it's going to be interesting. I think, like I said, I expect trades within the West as a couple teams kind of realized they're in, but they're not good enough, and they make some kind of move to try to upgrade. Look, I think we both expect Oklahoma City will now fall out of the playoffs, obviously. The Lakers move back into that spot, but then you get into the bottom of this, and you've got San Antonio, who I'm just not going to pick against. Not going to pick against,
yeah,
Popovich.
Yeah, that one, Pop is still there.
And by the way, like, look, LaMarcus Aldridge and DeMar DeRozan aren't sexy. Get them on your fantasy team because they're going to get you points every night. They're not going to rest that much. And they're just going to be tough to play against and beat. But if somebody else were going to sneak in over them and sneak into the playoffs, I know Sacramento's a sexy pick. I kind of think Dallas could be one. I think Dallas could be a team if Porzingis can really go. It becomes a real problem with Porzingis and Doncic and you know, Rick Carlisle getting everybody in good positions.
Yeah, how about New Orleans, right? Like, I mean, they got this guy named Zion Williamson who's kind of a big deal. Like, is that enough to get the Pelicans in the postseason? They have, like, half the Lakers' young guys, right?
They also have – I mean, they've got good veterans. I mean, you talk about they've got Jrue Holiday at the point, which is a really – I mean, that's just a great guy to have for them. They've got J.J. Redick off the bench. You know, we'll see – Ingram's the guy. Derek Favors, by the way, they picked up at center, is a, like, I don't think people realize how good Derek Favors is, like, because he was kind of in the Rudy Gobert shadow. Like, I really like that roster. Honestly, you follow the Lakers. Does Ingram end up the guy who starts to fade, or they try to move as the season goes on? Because Lonzo Ball's going to move the ball. Jrue Holiday's going to move the ball. Zion's going to attack. Derek Favors can fit in with that. He comes out of a system guy in Utah. He'll move the ball. And then it gets to Brandon Ingram, and it's like Carmelo got the ball. It just stops.
Yeah. You know what? There's, I think, fair questions and criticism about Brandon Ingram. And, you know, I know when the Lakers drafted him, they thought, hey, he could be a star player very too early. And you could even be skeptical if that's ever going to happen. But knowing how Brandon is and his work ethic, where it's not just, you know, most players in the NBA work hard, but he also works smart. I think the wall that he hit were two things. A, like, his comfort level playing with LeBron James just wasn't there. And, you know, that's on him. Like, the Lakers got to maximize LeBron because it's LeBron. But also, I think in that environment where I don't want to say they didn't focus on player development, because I think Luke Walton's staff, like, focused a lot on player development. But there wasn't, I think, as an organization, a lot of patience with that, and I totally understand it. But I think because of that circumstance, a new setting and new surrounding, but also Brandon's own work ethic mentality, like, he is going to be a guy that I don't know if he's going to be a star player or an all-star eventually, but I think if nothing else, he's going to be a dependable guy that will have lasting power in the league because he puts the work in and he has a fundamentally sound base of skills. And then it's a matter of him refining. You know, everyone's always going to be talking about how he needs to bulk up, and he has, but he needs to continue to do that. But refining his comfort level with his shooting, how he attacks the perimeter. But I think that he's always had this background of always chipping away at his deficiencies, having a good supporting cast or support system around him and good coaching. That I think the worst case scenario of him is, hey, he has a long career as a solid role player, but, like, there's also, I think, still the window, because he's still young, that he eventually could develop into something good.
Yeah. I'm not sure that happens in New Orleans, but I think you're right.
But I think it'll happen somewhere on the NBA.
We keep talking about just how tight the West is and how this is going to be really even, but I think part of that, too, is that unlike the East, where there's some genuinely bad teams at the bottom of it, Memphis, Oklahoma City, after they traded Chris Paul, and if they're not, you know, look, that's a rebuilding team, and Memphis is not going to win a lot of games, although I really like Jaren Jackson Jr., and I think John Morant could be really good. They're young. It's going to take them a little bit of time. But the bottom of the West is not going to be as bad. I mean, that's two teams, but the other 13, I mean, Phoenix won 19 last year. They're probably going to win low 30s, would you say? I mean, like, DeAndre Ayton takes a step forward. They've got Devin Booker, but now they've got a point guard out there, and they've got some veterans. Like, that's not a bad team.
Yeah, I don't think it's a bad team. I don't think they're going to make the playoffs.
No.
I think the only definitive here in the Western Conference, as far as who's not making the playoffs, let's put Memphis, Phoenix, and Oklahoma City off the board. But I think everything else is up for grabs, and then it's a matter of, okay, who's definitely making the playoffs? I put the Clippers, Lakers, Jazz, Rockets, Nuggets as definitives, and then everything else, I think, is wide open as far as Golden State, Portland, New Orleans,
Minnesota,
Sacramento, Minnesota, Dallas, San Antonio, and frankly, when you're looking, I think from, like, the 5 to the 8th seed, it's going to be, the margin for error is going to be very slim as far as, you know, the jockeying and the standings. I think it's going to make for a very entertaining, like, late March, early April slate of games, to say the least.
Yeah, I think you're going to see, I don't think you're going to see the teams, you know, turn off. I mean, part of that's, again, the way the lottery works. You just tanking for the very bottom. I don't want to say it doesn't matter, because you protect your odds of getting the number one pick aren't better, but you can also protect yourself from getting worse, right? Like, if you're the number one pick, worst record, the worst you can be is five. If you're the fourth worst, and the worst you can be is, what, nine? Like, yeah. The difference between five and nine can be a lot in a draft. So, like, I think teams will try to protect it a little still, but it won't be the same level of, especially, and look, Jameis Winston or whoever is going to be the number one pick next year, I don't think that's the same level as you're going to get in a few years when some of the other guys, there's some guys coming up and come through, and they'd be like, there's your franchise guy, and you know, we got into that in the 50 best and five over the summer. Down the line, there's going to be some guys that really turn some heads, but and teams will want to tank, but I don't know that it's the same because of the lottery odds. They're just trying to protect their back end a little. That said, I just don't think any of these, Phoenix wants, I mean, ownership's going to find a way to screw that up, but they would like to make the playoffs. None of those teams, all these teams you just mentioned, have legitimate playoff aspirations.
Yeah, and, the whole tanking thing, I think, will be reduced because of the better parity right now. But yeah. I'm very convinced that there is going to be some sort of attempt in jockeying to avoid the Warriors if they're a playoff team. Like, it's not a guarantee. There's a lot of question marks with them, but I think they'll be a playoff team because I think Steph and Draymond will carry them through. I think even though they're going to miss Klay a lot, like once he comes back after that first week of knocking off his rust, he's going to be Klay Thompson again. And the Warriors have the infrastructure of good ownership, coaching staff to develop the players they have, possibly make a move. And so with that, the first, second, third seed, they're not going to want to play Golden State in the first round. No. And, like, they will do whatever they can to avoid that. I wouldn't be surprised. But here's what's going to be the tricky balance with this, Kurt, is that toward the bottom end of the Western Conference standings, the margin between those teams is going to be so slim that as much as maybe you could see some of the top teams, like, suddenly resting a player and they're saying, oh, it's a minor injury, or we're resting for the playoffs, but it's with the hope of, hey, like, I don't want to win to slide up to play the Warriors, or the other scenario, them expending a lot of energy to avoid them going down a peg in the standings. The bottom half, the roster is going to be so fluid that no matter what you try to do it directly with how to manage the playoff standings, it's going to be out of the control, because 5 through 8, I think, will be a difference between like a half game, two games, and it's going to change like literally day to day toward the end of the season.
Yep. We didn't really get into this yet, but I wanted to ask you, because you were following the Warriors for the up in the Bay Area last year as a beat writer. How do you see the D'Angelo fit?
It's an interesting question. I think the D'Angelo Russell fit is amazing offensively. Defensively, not so much. And I think what's really going to be interesting is you have to set up the math equation. The net offensive benefits that the Warriors are going to get with him being there, with his outside shooting, you know, helping Steph's workload, reducing the losses of them missing Klay Thompson, at least for the NBA All-Star break. How do you equate that versus the loss of what they're going to be on defense? Because the Warriors are already going to be losing that end with, you know, they're obviously missing Kevin Durant, his offensive firepower, but he is a very good defender when he's engaged, but also losing Andre Iguodala. And Sean Livingston was getting old, but he was at least like a good veteran stalwart that would help guys with rotations. Well, really right now, Draymond Green's really the only definitive defender. Like, Willie Cauley-Stein is out for training camp.
Looney?
Kevon Looney and Alan Smilajic have been battling injuries. So, like, they don't have a center spot, and that's put a lot of, you know, onus on Draymond to do Draymond things. And he can cover all five positions, but he can't do that for 48 minutes, right? So, with that being said, usually the calling card is, hey, like, Klay can at least lock down a perimeter defender, play on the wing. And D'Angelo can't do that. And they're going to say, hey, it takes five guys. And of course it's going to do that. But Steph Curry is not a great defender. And it's just going to be a really troubling challenge. So I think it's really going to come down to how much can they kind of like minimize those lazy defensive possessions, but how much can they just make it up for being the Phoenix Suns, like, you know, back a decade ago, where it's like, hey, we can't defend other teams, so we're just going to try to outscore you. So I think D'Angelo's going to be good offensively, and I think he's matured through his time with Brooklyn. He loves playing with Steph. He's been kind of like a kid in a candy store there with doing his post-game workouts there with Steph, but there's no way around it. Like, his defensive issues are documented, and it doesn't help that he's with a team right now that roster-wise is challenged defensively.
Yeah, definitely. So, yeah, that's, and like you said, all that said, they get Clay back, they find a way to make this work a little bit, and you really don't want them in the first round. Like, you just really, they would just be, that's the toughest out, and there's not going to be any easy outs, but you're looking for a good matchup. That's the team that's been to five straight finals is not the team you want in the first round.
Right. And if they are making the playoffs, it's because all the stars align perfectly for the Warriors. And, you know, how the stars align perfectly for the Warriors is that not only are Steph Curry and Draymond Green doing the things that they do best, but they are as healthy as can be. And Klay is back and doing his thing. But I think when you're looking at all the changes that the Warriors made this offseason, yes, it hurts they lost Kevin Durant. Yes, it hurts that Klay is out for, you know, a good chunk of the season, at least through the All-Star break. But I think when you're looking at those four All-Stars, I firmly believe that the most important tandem out of that group was Steph Curry and Draymond Green. That's not to say that they're the most talented out of the group, but I think as a tandem, they were the best, because you're looking at Steph Curry and Kevin Durant, Klay Thompson. They're all good scorers. Like, when one of those guys were out, they always leaned on the other two to pick up the slack. Klay Thompson, Kevin Durant are also good defenders, but Steph and Draymond complement each other, where and they have different kind of personality, different kind of a leadership approach. Steph's a great shooter. Draymond isn't a great shooter. Draymond's a great defender. Steph isn't a great defender. So they can kind of cancel each other's weaknesses out, but they also can run an offense, right? Like, Steph Curry is a point guard. Draymond is that modern NBA player that, hey, even though he's a forward and a big, he can play the point guard position, play make. And I think that's going to be very valuable with covering each other's weaknesses with this period of transition, helping these young guys develop where they're getting, you know, Steph's positive encouragement, and then Draymond's kind of demanding expectations. But also, Draymond's going to be a guy that can run the offense when Steph and D'Angelo aren't. So it's going to be a very interesting pair, to say the least.
It's just going to be a very interesting season. And it's just the top to bottom throughout the league. It's just like the great thing about this, the West in particular, but the league in general, is that everybody's got questions. I mean, we can do this. We can do the same thing with the East. Like, I like, you know, obviously Philadelphia and Milwaukee are the top teams, but they've got questions. And now West, Lakers, Clippers, everybody's got questions, and we can pick our favorites, but that's what's going to make this season so much fun to watch, is that there's, for the first time in a while, it's just genuinely wide open.
Yeah, and you know what? That's the NBA likes that, because, I mean, it was ratings gold for them, for the Warriors and them being the villain in the finals, but I think, you know, tying into this China situation just in general, with free agency movement and the regular season, there was kind of an increasing trend of the devaluing of the regular season and how that pertains to people wanting to tune in. And look, I know, like, we're in the social media era and the millennials don't have cable and they're cutting TV and all that, but I think that from a league standpoint, this could help them get through that regular season rut of ratings, because there's this feeling that, hey, everything's wide open and everyone has a chance and there's a lot of good teams, and that's going to make for compelling television. Like, as much as I think the NBA kind of liked owning the offseason in July and being part of the conversation. They knew that what does it for the league. I think that there was a weariness that at some point, like, the games have to mean more than that. Like, yeah. That's what's going to drive people to the arenas. That's going to drive eyeballs to the TV screen. So the fact that this is wide open could wind up being a very good good thing financially for the league, and I think just fun for us in general. Like, there's going to be a lot of storylines to keep after and a lot of entertaining games to watch.
Exactly. Games are going to matter a lot. The it doesn't matter till Christmas thing doesn't quite play as well this year. So, because some team's going to, like I said, some team is going to fall behind early and panic, and it's going to be fascinating to watch. So we're going to have Mark, you're going to be back on throughout the season, here and there, talking about all of this and more. So thanks for doing it this time. Everybody can find your work at USA Today now, right? And all the same social media spots?
Yeah, USA Today. Basically, if you're at any airport, any hotel, or any newsstand around the country, like, go ahead and pick up a copy. I'll have stuff. Same social media accounts. Got Twitter account, MarkG_Medina. Instagram, Medina Syracuse. A not-so-subtle nod to my alma mater, right?
Yeah.
I'll be around the West. I'm back in LA, so it'll be a good dose of Lakers Clippers, but I'm handling a lot of the Western Conference, so I'll be making a lot of trips, you know, to San Francisco to check out the Warriors, and I'm sure other teams as well, with Houston and Utah, Denver, Portland. And I think just like it is with the NBA jockeying for position, like, where I'm going to be a lot will just hinge on how this Wild Wild West turns out and where the stories are and where the kind of the interesting teams to watch. So should be a fun season, to say the least.
Yeah, it is going to be wild, and we will talk to you more throughout, and we'll be back soon to talk about more of that. We'll be breaking down the Eastern Conference, and also, by the way, our award predictions are coming up soon. We'll have Dan Feldman on and talk about both our predictions for the season and our award predictions. I'll give you a hint. I don't think I'm going to take Giannis to win MVP this year. We'll see. I am not going with Brandon Ingram, however, so it's somewhere in between. anyway, thanks for listening. We'll be back next week with more Pro Basketball Talk podcast here at NBC Sports.
There's a moment you realize you're ready for what's next in your career. Maybe it's when you're trying a new scone recipe and think, I could open a cafe. Or maybe you're helping a coworker and say, I could teach a course on this. Whatever your moment is, it's never too early to plan for a career that lives longer. That's why the younger you are, the more you need AARP. For skills training, resume tips, and job listings, visit aarp.org/work.
Start clean with Clorox, because Clorox delivers a powerful clean every time. Because messes happen. Because I love the charcoal mask. Great, because why would I put that on my face when I could drop it in my sink? This is what I get for multitasking. Ugh, why is charcoal so sticky?
Hello?
Hey, Janice. I am so sorry. I thought I was on mute. No, we don't need to reschedule. I'll just stay off camera. Ooh, yeah, that happens. So start clean with Clorox. Use Clorox products as directed.